This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome to the newest episode of Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. I'm your host, Jason Fraley, picking the brains of the top filmmakers, musicians, and artists of our time. Today marks the 25th anniversary of Shakespeare in Love, which premiered on December 11th, 1998, before going on to upset Saving Private Ryan for Best Picture at the Oscars. I spoke to director John Madden when he visited Washington, D.C. to promote his political thriller Miss Sloane in 2016.
Here with John Madden, director of Jessica Chastain's new movie, Miss Sloane. Thanks for joining us, sir.
Thank you. Not that John Madden, I should say.
I'm sure he could draw some X's and O's here, but not right. That. We don't want the football thing going on. All right, before we dive into the movie, because we want to do that, before we started, you mentioned that you had a little history of radio yourself. Explain.
I do. I mean, actually, my career as a director began on national public radio in this country because I came over here in 1975 to work on a radio drama project that was funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting called Earplay. And I'd been working at the BBC, and they wanted somebody to come over here and help build a script base for this project. And so I and a guy called Howard Gelman put together a kind of program of playwrights, really, who were interested in working that medium. And one of those plays, which I directed, was a play called Wings by Arthur Cope. It was the first thing I ever directed on stage. You're asked to go and do it at Yale Drama School. Anyway, that's enough of that.
But more wings, please.
Yes. So I that was the beginning of my career, really, as a director.
How'd you shift from that into film?
I think a part of the way that I've come up through the business is to go from stage to radio to television for a while, and then into film, and I think each one of those transitions has informed the other one. I think radio has a huge amount in common with film, as a matter of fact. How the transition happened, in career terms, is a little harder to, take up too much time.
Yeah. Well, but before we move off that topic, though, what similarities did you? You said radio, and obviously radio is theater of the mind, and film isn't.
I would say in this respect, I think rhythm of storytelling. That's a huge part of what you do in a movie, and I think I learned that very, very thoroughly working on radio drama. Is just how a narrative unfolds and what the pace of that narrative is and what the internal tensile strengths of it are and how you need to work with that. It's also, there's nothing between you and the actor, which is a rule I've never forgotten. The best special effect in the world is the human face, or indeed the human voice. And I think I've carried those lessons forward, I suppose, into what I've done. But there are many, many other things, obviously, that divide and differentiate the two media. But I think there are a lot that unite it as well.
One thing that's different is that our listeners couldn't have told you just drank coffee. That's the beauty of radio. They can't see what's going on. All right, let's dive into Miss Sloane. Obviously, you are, you're well established at this point, Shakespeare in Love, everything else. So you can probably be a little more picky choosy in what projects you do. You got to really love it, probably. Take me into when you first read the script, what you thought. I believe it was on the blacklist, right? The great list.
It wasn't on
list.
The blacklist when I read it, no. Okay. It went on to the blacklist this year while we were actually producing and making the film. This is a very, very rare occurrence. It was a spec script that kind of came out of nowhere. I read it initially as a log line, and...
do you remember what the log line said?
I think it was just a portrait of a lobbyist approaching a gun regulation issue. It's a topic that kind of fascinates people in our country because I don't think we completely can get our heads around it and understand it. But it was just that in the first instance. And it's one of those very unusual things where I simply read it in one sitting, which I think most people I've subsequently talked to about the script, notably everybody I cast in it, probably had a similar experience. It's got a tremendous kind of momentum to it. But it was one of those ones where I was not being sent to me exclusively. I think I was one of, I don't know, I've never quite discovered, but say half a dozen or more, maybe a bit more, people at Film Nation who had optioned the script, sent it to, and I immediately put my hand up and said, my hat has to go into the ring for this immediately. It's just a very, very... compelling story. I mean, it was the beginning of a journey with Johnny Pereira, who wrote it, and myself. We worked on it then for the next 6 months once I had got the gig. But it's very unusual material.
Talk about, you said that you guys, you know, collaborated for that period of time. How much did the finished version reflect the original, and how much did you, like, what sort of things did you add that we see on screen were your contributions?
I think Johnny's... narrative is pretty intact, but only in terms of its overall shape. I think that what he, you know, it's a first time script, which is quite extraordinary given the level of achievement.
This is his first script or the first producer?
No, it's the first script.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I believe he told me there are a couple of other scripts that he hasn't dared show anybody.
Right. They're in a drawer, yeah.
but I mean, literally, wow. Only that. And, this is the first script he's put out there, and it got made. That's a very unusual story in Hollywood, though he's nothing to do with Hollywood, really. But I would say it's to do with character. That's how it developed. There's, you know, the movie, as you will learn when you talk to Jessica, which I think you're going to do in a moment, mm-hmm. Has this extraordinary, unusual, and incredibly compelling character at its core. Obviously, the eponymous heroine, you would say, yeah. Miss Sloan, whose journey in the film is very interesting. And I think the underpinning of all that, the emotional underpinning of all that, was something that Johnny had not really got into and mined completely. So without, it's a kind of movie you don't want to give the game away at all in terms of what's happening in it, but she's a ruthlessly focused professional, mm-hmm. who drives everybody and everything at the speed that she needs to go. And at the same time, there's a sort of counterbalancing narrative which has to do with what's happening to her and who she is, really. That's quite an interesting dynamic to explore and pretty fascinating to watch. I mean, she is a powerful and irresistible character, but also, you know, not without flaws and not without complications, you know, morally and emotionally.
And it's interesting. Pill popping to stay awake and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
you didn't get your coffee.
As I take another sip.
Yeah,
there's that. I mean, she's something to behold. Yeah. It's one of the chief things that also attracted me to the material is I instantly saw Jessica in the role. She and I did a movie together a number of years ago called The Debt. And have been looking for something to do together since then. And I wrote to her immediately and said, I think I found the one we might do. And she responded equally, instantly to the material.
So casting her then was probably a no-brainer. If you're literally picturing her while you're reading it.
I think there's a particular reason for that. I mean, she has an extraordinary range as an actress. The part called for a level of technical skill in terms of verbal dexterity and speed and ferocity, but also it called, I could see and wanted it to have this flip side of that, which is there's a sort of fragility that Jessica always brings onto the screen as well, and that seemed a very particular combination. It was a magnificent fit. Although, having said that, Jessica can fit anything. It's one of those extraordinary things about certain actors at a certain level that she has an amazing versatility. But I absolutely saw her in the role, yeah.
That's amazing.
You probably, are you sure it wasn't the line when it said, there's a little piece of dialogue that actually says tradecraft, and you're probably like, oh yeah, Zero Dark 30. They use that in that too. Is there, just while you're talking about her, you mentioned that you had a previous role with her and now this. Mm. Do you have a favorite role of hers that wasn't one you did?
Well, to be honest with you, I've liked everything she's done. Yeah. I mean, I thought she was a revelation in The Help. I thought she was extraordinary in Take Shelter, Zero Dark 30, obviously. I mean, she's never anything other than kind of riveting, I think, in whatever she does. But I admire her ability to stretch herself. You know, she won't settle. She's always looking for material that challenges not just her, but I think audiences as well. And, I salute that.
Definitely.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday, so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
You had mentioned that on across the pond, you guys look at the gun issue here, and it's almost like, what are those Americans up to? You said that earlier. Why do you think that issue draws you? I mean, there's even a line in there. What is it? She says, my position was solidified sometime between Columbine and Charleston. But yes. And God knows Sandy Hook and everything else in between, yes. And Virginia Tech and God, yeah, yeah, yada. What do you think it is from an outsider's perspective that our country is just, are we just too far inside it? We can't see the forest for the trees, or what is it?
I think it. Look, it's you have some advantage, I suppose, standing outside it, because you don't necessarily know what the circumstances that obtain are until you start to get really closely engaged in it. And I think one of the things I could say is that I understand a whole bunch better as a result of making this film, exactly why it's a unique issue over here. And it has to do with historical context, and it has to do with the way this nation sees itself and sees what its rights are and its need to protect itself, yeah, from overbearing government, of which, of course, we are the chief object of that.
Yeah, thanks for that, by the way.
Thank you. I think it's a matter of perspective, and one of the things I think is really something that'll be interesting about this film is it lifts the lid on that issue a little bit for people without in any way being polemical. The movie is not a polemic in any sense. It's actually an incredibly interesting character study, I think, a riveting story in a very particular context. But it nevertheless gives, let's say, us, my country's, some insight into it. And I think it's, you've got to remember that we come from a situation where even policemen are not armed. I mean, yeah, slightly more so now, but, you know, a truncheon is the most serious damage inflicting thing that a policeman carries around still to this day, unless they're on specific anti-terrorism duty or gun security duty or something. And therefore, and we have guns, obviously, and they are regulated, for sports and other pursuits and so forth. And so it's hard initially to get your head into a place where you understand that people feel it is their right to have that for self-defense, which I respect. So I suppose it's just a very interesting topic. I think people in our country are very interested in it.
Just watching it with sort of a fascination from afar. Just on that same topic, what sort of common sense measures do you think we could pass here?
Really, that's not for me to say. I mean, I think the film, would want to stress one thing, that I think people might come to this movie expecting it to be a certain kind of a movie, possibly one that is, as I said earlier, polemicized in some way.
How do you make it not preachy,
Well, because it isn't really about that. The milieu of the film is that issue, but actually, the movie is about a lobbyist, and a lobbyist who is, I would say, not representative necessarily of that industry, even though we researched all of this very, very carefully, but she's an extraordinary maverick figure. And I think it's better to say that the film is about political process, actually. And what it really is a thriller. It's a political thriller, and it sure as hell, the one thing I could promise everybody about it is it's not what you expect either in the film as a whole or at any moment in the film where you think it's going. It has an extraordinarily pleasurable quality of surprising you at every juncture, I think. And so, that was not the least of the reasons that I was attracted to the film in the first place, is that it's ambiguous, it's hugely surprising, it's an incredibly compelling story, it's an incredibly good ride, and along the way, it shines a light on some very interesting aspects of the political process, and shines a light on different aspects of a very contentious issue. I appreciate that and know that. So any movie that's a whole bunch of things at once, rather than a movie that can be defined in terms of one narrow definition, is a movie I want to see.
And it has a longer life,
Yeah, I think it does. It's the movie's funny, it's exciting, it's wholly unpredictable,
and it's
Jessica in a killer role. I mean just fantastic, and that's what I think it has going for it.
Definitely.
You mentioned how you're cognizant of that audience ride, and you're always trying to surprise them. That's even the line right there on the poster: make sure you surprise them. How do you make sure you surprise them without tipping your hat? With because as a director, it's sort of like you're the omniscient presence of the movie, right? Mm-hmm. You have the whole fatalistic idea of where it starts and ends, so you can drop little clues and teasers that you can catch on the second. But how do you not blow your cover too?
Movies work in different ways. One thing an audience will always clobber you with is if they think the movie is predictable. And I think it is a besetting sin at which a certain kind of Hollywood orthodoxy, I would say, tends to enforce, which is, somebody once said to me, how can you expect the audience to respond to it when they don't know what the movie is about at the beginning? And I would say,
that's the point.
You don't want to know what the movie is about at the beginning. The movie will tell you what it's about. And there is a sort of idea that somehow you have to tell an audience what they're going to experience and then have them experience it, which seems wholly reductive of the idea of storytelling. So,
especially a thriller.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, I think that the core of this is an incredibly compelling character, and that a movie, to some extent, takes its point of view from the character that drives the story. Of course, just to say one other thing, usually in a lot of movies, that character is a man. And actually, the kind of way this character functions in the story, you probably would be more familiar as a kind of movie had that person been a man, because she's a maverick. She's a breaker of rules. She's a pusher of envelopes. She's drives the whole story at an incredible pace and with a kind of passionate force. It's very unusual to see that, actually, in a woman. Although, you know, we're riding the crest of a wave, I think, this year, where there are a whole slew of really interesting female roles. And and so, you know, I'm very happy to be a part of that. But I that's not really to answer your question. I mean, you have to, the key to all of this is the script.
Right.
I am usually meticulously involved in every aspect of the script with the writer. The writer sits right alongside me as the kind of chief creative architect of the film. I don't take any credit for the writing, but I'm heavily involved in it with the writer, if they will allow that. Because that you have to make the blueprint of the film on the page, really, and then every actor understands the role that they play in that process. You know, it's just you have to stress test the movie very, very carefully in terms of where are you unconsciously repeating yourself, where are the audience getting ahead of you in a way that is not helpful or desirable, where they're tapping their feet waiting for a development that they can see coming, and so forth. You know, that's disciplined, really carefully thought out, smart writing, and I think this movie's got that in spades.
Oh, absolutely. You mentioned that you set out and succeeded, in my view, making a political thriller here in Washington, D.C. There's some cool sites, you know, the Watergate and Kennedy Center. You see all kinds of cool sites just as a D.C. guy. It's even an extra treat for our listeners here. It's funny, they just did Bob Woodward just had a 40th anniversary screening of All the President's Men down at the Washington West Film Festival just this past weekend. We got to see him talk afterwards, but... Was there a movie like that or Parallax View or anything?
You've named two, okay. To be honest with you. I mean, All the President's Men totally blew me away when I first saw that. Parallax View was and remains one of my favorite movies. And, you know, I think this film sits in that tradition. At least I would hope it would. You know, there are a couple of clear nods, which I won't mention, you know, I didn't actually set about making movies, you know, by way of referencing other movies. But I think that they're movies that, you know, one of the things I really love about America is that political engagement is very, very noticeable here, particularly amongst the young, as they start to, you know, get really, really passionately engaged in an issue or a campaign. I find that kind of thrilling to watch. I mean, literally thrilling to watch.
That's the real thriller.
It is. You know, this movie has a lot of that in it. There's Jessica's character has a team of people who work with her, and I think a lot of people are going to identify with that, working for a leader they believe in, even though in this case rather an unusual one. But... there is definitely a salute to that kind of movie. I like movies that are smart. I like movies that take me into a world that I don't know or understand or have necessarily seen. I think this, I don't know how many movies there have been that have been made about the lobbying industry, which per se might not be the most fascinating industry to behold. But when you've got a character like this actually operating in that space, it's riveting, I think. Any movie that's set in or around DC, or any story that's set in or around DC, I'm usually a kind of sucker for.
Awesome. Well, I know we got the signal, so congrats on the film, congrats on Jessica and everything. You know, final seconds. We're almost 20 years, right? Shakespeare in Love? Almost, 98, almost. Just real quick, memories of Gwyneth and Judy Dame Judy. Just that whole wild ride, you know, in hindsight, with the benefit of hindsight.
Well, you sort of described the words very well. I mean, described the experience very well. It was a wild ride. I mean, it was one of those movies you had... The only baggage we had going into it was that everybody said, you can't make a movie like that. You can't make a movie with the word Shakespeare in the title and expect people to come and see it.
You showed them.
You can't make a movie about show business. They never work. There was a whole bunch of things. It was an incredibly challenging film to make because it was straddling tonally two different things. It was like at one level a wild farce, and at another level a kind of romantic, poetic drama, I suppose. And, you know, I was blessed with, obviously, with an extraordinary cast who were... You know, Gwyneth always used to talk about the fact that she was the only person who was not steeped in that language, although, of course, she comes from a theatrical background and had, you know, been around Shakespeare a good part of her life. But, you know, that it was one of those ones where you thought, are we getting this right? Is anybody going to be interested in this other than those of us making it? And I remember the experience of seeing it. You know, we did the usual routine of putting it in front of a research audience. And I've directed in the theater a lot. That's an unmistakable sense you get if a movie is communicating with and holding an audience. It was just fantastic to watch. And I felt quietly encouraged that we would have a chance of playing with an audience. The rest of it was beyond anybody's wildest dreams. So we didn't know that we would connecting quite the way that it did. Well, one off experience, you know.
Yeah, well, if this Miss Sloan has half the acclaim as that one, I think you'll be doing something. So thank you so much. I really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. Our theme music is Scott Buckley's Clarion. Remember to give us a 5-star rating if you like what you hear. We'll see you next time.